The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Heumann, and we're looking at our weekly screening stocks, the Vox stock screens, Vox screen stocks. I can never say that correctly, John, but you get the gist of what we're doing here. John comes up with a different screener every week, and we look at the constituents and we pick one each from that list there. So, John, what is it this week? And first of all, welcome back from your holiday. Did a bit of camping in the heat wave, didn't you? Wow.
I did, yeah. I went down to Cornwall, which is supposed to be wet, and it was very, 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 very dry and very, very hot.
How did you get away from the heat? Because, I mean, you know, we just spend most of the time, luckily in the back of our garden, we got it's temporary, but it's a swimming pool. We jumped in and it cooled us off and stuff. But, you know, we came back from Turkey, because Turkey's, you know, it's nice because you've got swimming pool next to you and you've got air conditioning in the hotel. You can get away from it. With camping, how do you get away from the heat? How do you put up with that?
I don't think we did.
Wow.
It's just hot. We weren't too far from a beach.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Cornwall's got lovely beaches. The one thing about that beach was you had to actually hike over a hill and down an enormous cliff actually get to the beach. So we got nice and cool in the sea when we got down there. But then, getting there and getting back again was a bit sweaty, as was the tent. But, you know, it's such a nice place. It's
I suppose the nights, beautiful. I suppose the nights, even though quite hot, they're hotter in the house than they're in the tent. I suppose tent. What was it like in the evenings there? Was it all right?
Evenings was lovely, but mornings were, as the sun sort of broke and came over the hedge and hit the back of the tent, it got a bit hot. But it was nice. It was nice to be away from looking at stock markets for a week and a half as well.
Yeah, did you do that though? I mean, when I'm away, I can't help but look. I mean, I do love the market. So it's, to me, I find a holiday. If you enjoy what you do, and I enjoy looking at the markets, looking at my stocks, then a holiday, really, you think, well, why am I breaking from this? So best night's have a break, I suppose. But did you actually have a break from it, or did you check, you know, stock prices or news?
No, I had a break.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we went wild, so it's kind of pretty hard to get to get access to anything really meaningful. So yeah, I thought, you know, I'm gonna see what it's like just to give it all a complete miss for a couple of weeks. And
fair play. I think you and I at the opposite ends of the spectrum on holidays here, right? I mean, I said to my wife, listen, we do camping that now and again, but literally it's 40 minutes down the road. It's quite a nice little campsite where the kids enjoy it. So a kid of 12 and a kid of 9, they love it because there's other kids on there. That's the only reason why we go. And I can't wait for the evenings when, you know, get the fire going and the barbecue, a few drinks. That's me. And hopefully I have enough to drink to knock me out for like, 10 hours in the tent. But then literally I want to come home after two nights. It's like, that's it, pull my hair out. But normally we go now instead of going to a decent hotel abroad, but even that, the travelling there and from there is a nightmare. But I said to my wife, listen, if we go on holiday, I want to sort of upgrade my standard of living for a week. I don't want to go down. I don't want to go to the level where, you know, you see people, honestly, you know, like I say, across the channel, they're trying to get into the country, living in tents. And I thought, why would I don't want to choose to do that? They're choosing not to, they don't want to be part of that, but we're choosing to do it. So I can't get on with camping. I have to be, you know, I don't know, maybe I have just a soft life all my life. I find it two nights maximum for me. I'm literally burning out after that. So fair play to you there.
Yeah, I think we did eight in the tent, or was it nine? I can't remember. We did stop in a nice hotel on the way home to have a wash.
Yeah, to me that's close to almost being in the special forces, eight nights in a tent in the heat wave. That's the kind of stuff they do in the sort of outbacks of the, you know, rainforest and stuff like that. But well done. Well, it's nice to get you back, John. So anyway, thanks. This week's screener, what are we looking at?
So we're looking at quality small caps. Mm-hmm. So it's a little screen that I dug out of SharePad's library of stock screens. And it's looking at things like returns on capital employed, free cash flow margin. What else have we got in there? CapEx to operating cash flow. So how much the business spends actually maintaining its infrastructure against the cash that's coming into the business. And I've adapted it slightly to look at some things, to add a PE, to look at forecast earnings. I don't want anything whose earnings are going backwards.
Yeah.
So I've added that to the screen as well.
Okay, cool. Well, listen, you're back from my... There's a couple in there. I mean, looking at the screen, let me just go up there. There's a couple in there I looked into when they were doing sort of Forex and derivatives and all that. And I think, in fact, recorded one we looked at previously or talked about, and is Spectra another one, I think, or Gentex, I don't know which one they are. But I mean, I stay clear of those. I'm not quite sure about the balance sheets and how they work. You know, I think if something goes wrong financially in the markets, macro, do they take a bigger hit or leverage hit than everyone else? I don't know. But so I stood away from those. But go on, go for what you... Winkworth is on there, which we talked about before, which is basically London-based sort of real estate, but they have places elsewhere. Best of the Best. I know, I'm aware of Pebble Beach Systems. They do recording stuff for broadcast. And K3 Capital's on there, we mentioned before. MTI Wireless, who had news out recently. So what have you gone for, John?
Well, I've actually gone for one of those ones that you you mentioned as avoiding, one of the financial service providers, Argentex. And it's quite interesting that, you know, the point you make there about, you know, risk, balance sheet risk. This company is essentially a middleman. It's essentially a provider of foreign exchange broking services to banks, corporates, high net worth individuals. So it's not actually taking on the risk.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So, you know, if you actually look at its balance sheet, very, very strong balance sheet. But obviously, you know, during the pandemic, you know, foreign exchange demand wasn't as big as it had been. So there was a bit of a soft period, you know, a couple of years ago. But what we're seeing now is some really quite spectacular growth. So we had results at the beginning of July, and this company grew revenues by 23%. To 34.5 million, and what I thought was really interesting is that 8 million of that has come from new clients. So we're talking businesses that need sort of very large foreign exchange services for obvious reasons, you know, international trade basically.
And they're close to 90 million market cap, aren't they? 90.
Thereabouts. Just a little bit more than that as of today. And what's really interesting at the moment is, you know, foreign exchange, yeah, there has been some volatility in the foreign exchange market. Doesn't really matter to Argentex. In fact, in a sense, it's been good for it because, you know, particularly UK customers are really trying to protect themselves from sort of the weakening of sterling, and we're seeing that in Europe as well, the weakening of the euro versus the dollar. So there's a lot of sort of forward contract buying here, hedging essentially. And that also means because so much of the business is now looking at, you know, sort of sterling, euro, US dollar, there's less risk from emerging market currencies, which do have a tendency to be a lot more volatile. The other thing I like about this business, it's expanding. So, you know, it's been growing its headcount, both back and front office. It's been, you know, targeting international expansion. So we've got a new office opening in Australia here once they get their regulatory approvals. And it's investing heavily in technology. So it's got a big, nice new technology platform. And that's actually, you know, we've already seen evidence that that's driving quite a lot of growth. So the company pointed to a record month in March. That saw 391 trades, and you know, that gives you an idea how big these trades are individually, compared to 123 trades in March the previous year. So that online investment has the potential to really grow the business. And what we've got is, you know, it's essentially very, very good quality, you know, high margins, high gross margins, and that potentially, because there's this sort of fixed cost base, as revenues grow, profits will grow quicker. So you have that operational gearing effect here. What I do know is that a lot of this business is conducted by very large banks. Something like 85% of the market is the traditional banking industry. So you know, it has to compete with those guys, and you know, there is a certain commoditization to the market. But this is why I think the technology side of things is so important. You know, it's essentially fintech-ing itself, because banks are really, you know, notoriously inefficient when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Looking at the chart there, I quite like it, really. It's come down a lot, you know. So, I mean, I don't know where IPO'd at, around about 130-ish, I think, somewhere. And that was back in 2019, June. So it's been on the market for, 3 years now? And now we're at 79 pence. But, do you know what? Just looking at it, it's bounced off a low year of 66 pence back in March. And it seems to be trying to get up there. And it's, the share price has recently just ticked up and then gone back below the 200-day moving average. It's quite nice to see that when a company's share price starts flirting with that, because it seems to, you know, that once that moves down to meet the share price, and you get a few higher lows there, it seems my bottom may be in. So, yeah, it's good technical position. And what I look through the list at the moment, because, you know, everyone's worried about the macro environment going forward. I was looking for a company with, you know, recurring revenues and all that stuff and long sort of contracts, but I couldn't see many recurring revenues amongst them. Yeah, but anyway, I like that. I suppose with big you know, big deals, big clients like that, then they're pretty stable, I suppose, aren't they, with Argentex?
Yeah, it does seem that way. And, you know, I looked at them. I mean, the management team is interesting as well. And, you know, notably, you've got the non-exec chairman is Digby Jones.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No,
okay.
You know, he's a heavy hitter, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I've gone for something completely different to that. Someone raised my awareness of these a couple of years ago when they IPO'd. And I don't know why, because I don't see it as being shielded from any inflation. So with that in mind, I've gone with Facilities by ADF. And they're a leading provider of premium service production facilities for the UK film and HETV industry. All these sort of, you know, you get these honey wagons, what you call them, where they get the makeup artists done or the stars sit in them. I mean, I've been lucky to work with sort of Ruth Jones back in the past, and I've been on set with her before, and they've loads of these things from Facilities, so, you know, catering. And this company's got, they started off in 1992. They're now profitable. They say cash generative, offers a suite of over 500 vehicles and trailers to its customers. The group aims to increase this count to 700 by 2023. They just did a trading update, actually. They did say the group means, so they say 2022, this year, order book is fully booked. The board is confident the group continues to trade in line with market expectations for the year. And they say, additionally, market dynamics remain strong with continued robust demand for film and high-end television. UK and group, so the 2023 order book continues to grow. And just looking at the broker notes, I mean, they're about, what are they at the moment? Let me just check out their market cap. They're 47, I haven't got the cash in the EVs, they're 47 million market cap on today's share price, and they're good growth. Of course, they took a knock in 2020, 2021 there, but it bounded back, really. So the full year top-line revenue for 2019 was 16 million. They went down to 8 million because of COVID in 2020, and then up to 27.8 million for this year, with 7.7 of EBITDA, after-tax profit of 3.9. So it's got next year, it expects, or for this year, by up to 31.8 improvement in EBITDA. And then, so it's going to quietly grow. Let me just look at the growth figures here on a percentage basis. So it's looking at 14% for this year, 21% for next year. And so I quite like them. And they're premium media. And I just think, it's just a bit different, I thought. I've not heard of many companies in this space that are listed. No. In my mind, when you get a listed company like this, and maybe most of your competitors are not listed, there's an extra, you know, bit of leverage there for you, and you know, access to capital and just the cachet of having, you know, been a listed company, PLC. Someone did raise my awareness of these, say the growth figures are very good. But I suppose you've got to be aware, and I don't know who puts, you know, all the sort of diesel and the petrol in these vehicles, the catering equipment, but I assume that's going to go up, isn't it? So
you would think so, but presumably they can pass it on. You know, they're obviously providing these facilities to the companies that are making television programs. They'll just pass that cost straight on. So yeah, you'd think it's going to be Netflix or the BBC that are paying rather than them on the cost front.
Yeah, yeah. And just looking at valuations here, sales revenue for this year 1.5, EV EBITDA of 5. So, you know, I try to look at growing companies below 10 and below 2 on the sales. So it meets those metrics. Mm. And just a bit different than someone suggested to me, but it is based on an industry that can take a hit, I suppose. That's the trouble. But, you know, how much of a share of this industry they have, I don't know. But it's worth looking at. 40 million market cap. And like I said, they're going to be doing, 31 million of revenue next year. And they're saying that the pipeline's strong and the order book is full, pretty much.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, this is why I like stock screening, because, yeah, you know, I must admit, I'd not heard of this company until it popped out of the screen today. Mm. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's profitable. So, you know, to find a sort of small cap that's delivering that sort of profit growth, then, you know, the quality metrics look pretty decent as well. So, you know.
Well, look at the EBITDA, the margin on the EBITDA. I mean, you know, the for this year or for the next year, expect to be, you know, 20-30% margins there. So it's good margins on the EBITDA level. You know, it's not thin. So who knows?
No, then, you know, good returns on capital. I mean, the only worry you'd have about, as you said, you know, is a bit of a sort of feast and famine type industry. But and there are problems certainly in the streaming market. You know, certainly there's increasing competition for viewers amongst the likes of Netflix and Disney and whoever, and worries about the sort of trajectory of that industry in terms of the actual content providers, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of slow up in the amount of content being created.
Well, yeah, well, that's it. I think if anything, it's a flight to quality, isn't it? People, I mean, I think, you know, Netflix and all these people realise that when they get a win on their hands, it helps them subscriber wise, and they can only do this by investing, can't they, in good productions and good stories and all that. So they have to get them into production, I suppose, and that's where you're going to win in the end. I mean, I've been going through my subscriber list recently. In fact, it's very. We had Apple, and even though there's some good productions on there, there's not a lot that I looked at. But it's only, you know, fiver a month. And I think, is it worth getting rid of for fiver a month? But I did anyway. I mean, the last thing I looked at on there, oddly, one of the last two things I've really enjoyed on Apple TV, I think, was, WeWork. It was the WeWork documentary. I don't know if you saw that, but... it's generally worth watching. I was addicted to it, really enjoyed it. But Adam Newman, startup, he's very much a guy who's called a visionary. One of these guys is a good salesman, essentially, and he's managed to get lots of people to invest in his company, even though the financials didn't stack up. You know, and he promised a lot of people a lot of things, didn't deliver, and so he's kicked off the board of WeWork. At one point, it was valued at $47 billion. Before it went public, they had to kick him off the board, basically, because it wasn't very transparent. But it currently is worth $4 billion. But, oddly, he's just raised another $350 million for his new company called Flow from VC funders. But that was on Apple. But it's a very good quality documentary. And I'm thinking, you know, if it was more on there, then so they need to up their count. Maybe that would help ADF. But, I mean, they need to up their amount of documentaries. But Netflix needs to churn them out. And I think with high competition here now, I think there's going to be a lot of productions churned out. But again, I have no in-depth knowledge of the film industry, so who knows? And you're right, it could be famine, really.
But as you say, the company's got a nice order book there, and you know, those forecasts seem to be underpinned. So, yeah, I think it looks quite decent. I might have a dig around this one myself.
Yeah,
you got to ask me a question though, Justin. What were you on set with Ruth Jones for?
Oh yeah. So no, I before, you know, TV, I was before TV, before sort of podcasts, I was in investing. I've always loved investing, but I used to do radio as well. I used to work at Capital Radio in London with like Johnny Vaughan and all that, and Denise Van Outen, and then I worked at Radio Wales with Ruth Jones, because she started off. She after Gavin Stacey, she went to do some bits on the radio, and I just sent my CV and said, I see that Ruth is starting radio. If you want any help, let me know. So her husband got into contact, which he's the executive producer of some of their stuff, and said, yes, we've gone very well. And I started producing her for Radio Wales, and then I did a quiz show spin-off, like a topical spin-off, which I hosted as well, and she was on that. But then they said to me, because I got on quite well with them, they said, do you fancy auditioning for Gavin and Stacey? I thought, what? I said, I've never really acted. So then she did a chat show on BBC Wales, BBC One Wales, and I was involved in a couple of sketches on that. I was like a security guard on the Christmas special, so I was on TV doing that. And then they said, well, do you want to audition for Gav? So I give it a go. And so I took it to a place in London. I got in there, and who was the guy from? I can't think of his name. Auditioning next to me was a guy from Only Fools and Horses. What's his name? I can't think of his name. But literally, I'd never acted before in my life. And he was next to me in the waiting room, all confident. But I didn't get the part. So I'm glad that they didn't give me the part, because I wasn't very experienced in it. I'm trying to find anything, but yeah. So I worked on that, and then they gave me a part in their which is odd. In the Sky comedy, which is, I can't think of what it's called now, but yeah, apart from that. Denzel in Only Fools and Horses, he was sitting next to me in the waiting room for Gavin Stacey audition, so I don't think he got the part either. But there we are, Paul Barber, his name is. But yeah, but I've been in these trailers and they're quite impressive, you know. If you look at them, you go into them and they've got, you know, the makeup sets, there's the wait, the places you wait, there's the catering. It's all done very well. And I'm thinking, with the proliferation of sort of maybe streaming, maybe more productions were coming in. And Britain, you know, it's one of our industries we're quite good at, is it TV and film, you know. So
yeah,
who knows? But having said always based on the fundamentals, and rather than just, you know, putting your finger in the ear and see which way the wind's blowing. But yeah, but it looks like a good company. And like I said, if you look at the chart as well, it has, you know, it's sort of baked in. It's back to almost pre IPO level. So 63 pence, it did hit sort of 84 pence. At the height, just after IPO, but it's obviously come back down with the COVID and the worry about inflation. But is it priced in? Who knows?
Looks interesting. You wouldn't expect an actor to spend eight days in a tent in a belfry.
No, by the way, on a personal level, have you invested in anything of late, or are you still watching?
No, I'm still watching. Been on holiday, so not really been watching closely. But I'm just sort of, I kind of feel that the markets are still fragile. Yeah. And I know there's been a bit of a recovery, but you know, I was looking at some of the sort of high quality large caps, you know, things like Rightmove and Auto Trader, which are amongst the sort of best quality companies on the market, and they had sold off quite sharply.
Yeah.
And they've actually bounced back a lot, sort of retracing 50% of their losses.
Yeah.
But they're still trading on very, very punchy multiples. You know, and I still think there's a lot of economic risk out there. And I do think that, you know, although the economy and the stock market are not one and the same thing, that it will flow through at some point. So, yeah, I'm still in watching.
Yeah, I know. I believe that. I think if you look at the American markets, they're nuts. I mean, you could break down to algorithmic sort of trading, but it seems like, you know, I mean, I look at a NASDAQ, I think the Russell, you know, small cap index, they're like 20% off their lows now, which is technically the start of a bull market. I thought they've got ahead of themselves completely here, because even though inflation print was supposed to be 8.7 in America, it came down at 8.5, everyone was cheering it like crazy. But let's be honest, 8.5% inflation is still high. It's still going to affect a lot of businesses, and it's going to take a while to come down to 2% if that's the target, and it'll probably take years to get down to 2%. So there's still a lot of businesses out there that are going to be affected for a long time due to high prices. So I think, you know, it is a stock picker's market, but anything that's rallied like crazy, you know, back to, I think, stay clear of it, because we're not out of the woods. And I've said this on the weekend podcast. I mean, if anything, we're probably, you know, halfway into the woods, just come out, maybe a bit more than halfway. There's still more than, say, I think 45% of woods to walk through before we get to the clear, you know, a clean economy here. So, I mean, yeah, plenty of time to, you know, let's get your powder dry. I think the American markets has got ahead of themselves a little bit, you know.
No, it has a feel of a bear market, right? I saw a great piece of research. I think it was called Jeffrey's Associates, and he's basically saying you've got to look at what makes up the U.S. inflation read. Mm. And, you know, you have got a lot, you know, petrol or gas, as they call it, sort of cycling out of those figures. But you've got a lot of inflation that's already happened, which isn't yet showing up, particularly in shelter housing. So you know, it's going to take a long time for that inflation figure to come down to anything approaching the sort of 2% target that you know, seems to be the figure that most Western central banks aim at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the companies I'm sort of, you know, like I said, I'm trying to focus on a little bit. I mean, I've got not much spare cash anyway, but I mean, if I was going to look at it, it'd have to be, you know, recurring long-term revenues, you know, that are almost guaranteed to coming in, because, like I said, you can expect, I think, downgrades from quite a few companies in the next 6 to 12 months just on energy costs, you know. So, anyway. And by the way, you can check out the full screen list at Vox there, and by all means, if you want us to look at a screen, have a suggestion for a screener, let us know, and we'll go through it, and we'll pick a couple out. Cheers, John. Speak next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.